back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Come local, still doing it, still eating ice cream, even on the hot days. This was one of my favorites here. I've been bringing out all the empty pints for Don Moeller to salivate to. He's actually got more Tark in his freezer than I got. Peppermint ice cream with homemade peppermint patties and chocolate. And nothing not to like about that on a 100-degree day. Taharka, made right here in Baltimore. Our friends at State Fair out in Catonsville, opening El Guapo, named after me, of course, in Catonsville, with the chips and the salsa and the guacamole. Coming soon, Evan Brown's going to be on Baltimore Positive this week, talking about all of that, as well as Fadley's. You can ship those crab cakes anywhere in the world. You want to be a hero for the 4th of July. I am wearing the shirt that I picked the crab with the 2.2 million video views now out on YouTube. It's picking up steam, and it's all because Don Moeller told me I didn't know how to pick a crab, and it turns out, just like everything he's told me since 1982 at Dundalk High School, he was right. Moeller and Gary Realty, they will sell your home. Jeff Moeller's on the beat, wearing the mask, 6 feet away, on the internet, buying, selling, listing homes, and getting your home sold. Moeller and Gary Realty. Don Moeller, we had a segment earlier with Chef Steve Albright at the Franciscan Center. I think we wanted to sort of backtrack here and get the executive director from the Franciscan Center. But you know what I like best about the executive director of the Franciscan Center, Don?
I can see it coming, and it isn't Catonsville, is it?
Well, I mean, he's from Dundalk, but he's from, you know, I mean, we had a terminology that I'm not going to say about Patapsco and the Patriots over there. But, Jeff, welcome in from the Franciscan Center here in Baltimore. Dundalk to Dundalk, and it was unfortunate that they sent you over to Patapsco. If you had gone to Dundalk like me, you would have had a high school guidance counselor like Don Moeller back in 1982. How about that?
Well, I would have loved to met Mr. Moeller, Don, when I was in high school, no doubt.
Well, look at how good you would have turned out, but, you know.
That's right.
Hey, you know, we had your chef, Steve Albright on earlier talking about everything at the Franciscan Center, and I'll give you a chance to brag on Steve, and everybody can find that out in our buyatoyota.com audio vault as well as at Baltimore Positive. But, you know, everything you guys do there in the middle of the city sort of represents all the things Don and I were talking about in hardships, in normal times, let alone pandemic and COVID. How many good people wake up every morning here and try to make our city better, you know?
Yes, we do.
Well, you come from good stock in Dundalk, so I want to give you a little opportunity to expand upon that, because before we got started, you were talking about your parents and where you're from and how one winds up from Dundalk becoming the executive director of the Franciscan Center, which I like, by the way, because it was established in 1968, just like
me. That's right.
Absolutely.
A month before you were born, sir.
Absolutely, that's true. I looked that
up.
Hey, when you talk about the summer of 1968, and Don, I had Tim Wendell on, who wrote a great baseball book about that, but we've heard so much about the summer of 68, and I would think the Franciscan Center was born amidst some civic trauma 50 years ago, right?
Yes, of course, yes. And people, good people, individuals and families, turned to the Sisters of St. Francis of Assisi, and they did not turn their back. They stood up and they were there for so many individuals and families, and their mission, they had no idea what they got themselves into, and I think they would be ecstatic to see what we've done in the last almost 52 years.
Well, I know there's a lot of people that support you guys. I mean, the NFL has supported you guys.
Yes.
You know, we've talked about your chef and the people you're feeding. But this pandemic, give me a look at the Franciscan Center, let's say, about March 11th and then probably March 18th, and how much literally the world changed for everyone who was food unstable. And we've learned a lot about that with the Maryland Food Bank and others here in the last 4 or 5 months.
Well, I would say we felt it. We felt it that week in March 11th. You felt the nervousness. You felt everything coming from the clients, our my staff, my volunteers. We were already getting that week good volunteers and people that we love who are just calling me up saying, you know what, this might be the last week I can volunteer, because you know we're getting kind of nervous about what's coming ahead. And I fall in that group that everybody was talking about that should definitely stay home, right? The 65 and older, especially if they have any kind of health background that's a risk, that they provide a risk. So we started getting those phone calls, and then we got, you know, and then so we on March 13th, we started having more intimate conversations with our staff, and it became my decision, or the center's decision became very easy. The staff did not want to close. They said, how do we close when our community is going to look to us even more so, at least next week? And we still thought at that point it was going to be 2 weeks, maybe three. So we went into that, and we, you know, and
that, that's the point where the federal government lied to us. But I just want to inject that in there, by the way. So
I I'm not going to disagree. I think there's definitely more information that was they knew, but it really, not having that information really helped hurt all of us in preparing properly. And so I would say that's when I, you know, that information, and then over the weekend we got our, we got this call from a gentleman named Doc Cheatham, and he said, Jeff, I got your phone number. I need your help. And I, how do you turn down this passionate plea for food? And it's not in our DNA at the Franciscan Center to not respond to that. And we were able to help. The first day on that Monday, we did 200 sandwiches or meals on top of our already 600, 500 or so that we did that day, at the front door. And then we bumped it up to, 400, and then eventually, you know, 800 meals a day by that week. By the end of that week, we helped the Matthew Henson community with about 1,800 meals by that Friday.
Well, you know, for finding other people to support this, where does help for the Franciscan Center come?
Oh my gosh, let me tell you. So our budget was not, no budget was prepared for this, and so we are. You know, while everything moral about us says we want to stay open, our finances were not prepared. And so that first week, towards the end of the first week, we got phone calls from Janet Curry with Bank of America and someone from the Weinberg Foundation. And they did a gut check on me. And I said, oh, you know, they said, I don't want to hear the fine. Tell me what's really going on. What are you feeling? What are you seeing? And don't say fine. This is time to be honest. And they heard, and they got back usually within a day or two saying, hey, like Bank of America, we're sending $35,000 within a week. And it was like, what? And it was like unheard of. And then the Weinberg Foundation started, and then it helped us because I didn't have to, before COVID, I was every 2 to 3 weeks, you know, around payroll time. It, you know, we're still a business, and I get nervous around payroll time. Just because, you know,
run a business too. Everybody that runs a business does. Yeah,
and
sure.
So the last thing, so with those support systems, we could look at, you know, meeting payroll for the next 3 to 4 weeks, and then that gave us more freedom to look at how we can serve better and more dignified, so that, you know, so that was really thankful that we had that. Early phone calls from key partners like the Weinbergs and the Bank of America, the Bunting Foundation, H&S Bakery.
Well, you've also had the National Guard chip in, right?
National Guards, their first day of service with us was April 6th. And so we had to do a number of phone calls, and we had to find a network we had to expand our network, basically. And some good people helped us tap into their networks. And, you know, being from Dundalk, we all know that, you know, even though my mom said it's never about who you know, and reality is it's about who you know. And so we had to get connections so that we could get a hold of the National Guard. And it took a little while, but April 6th, they pulled up. It was like a parade here. We had 5 Humvees, 12 soldiers, and we were all, like, very excited. The neighbors, our neighbors were excited to see them. There was nothing. They came out, and they have been tremendous assistance for us. And we could not have do what we do without their support.
Don, man, just like you drew it up in Baltimore County, right? People coming together and helping each other, right?
That's right.
Well,
you
never do it by yourself. You know, I go back several county executives, and he's continued as a congressman to always say, you're only as good as your team. And that's Dutch Ruppersberger. Anybody that's been around Dutch Congressman Ruppersberger for a minute or two, I certainly heard Dutch talk about team and the importance of teamwork. And, boy, you put that together there, Jeff, because what I'm struck by, and Nestor nailed it right on the head, is how you had to step up to a level that you'd never been before. But for people who aren't familiar, you're about, yes, you feed people and hundreds of thousands of people, but you're about so much more than just feeding people.
We are. And the food, I want it to be the highest quality. I've always wanted to be the highest quality, so that when a person leaves, I think we've all had, and I hope we all had that one experience, or hopefully more, when you get done a meal, the perfect meal for that time, you walk away knowing that you can take the next challenge, right? Whatever life throws at you, I'm ready for it. And I want that to be every meal that we serve. And I feel like when I found Steve, and then we were able to get Steve to be in, Chef Steve to be in our kitchen, I knew we had a possibility to do something really unique. And so the food is a big part. But then once you're here, we got our social workers. We got, you know, we'll bring in haircuts. We'll bring in free clothing. We'll bring, you know, we can help people with IDs, their birth certificates, eviction prevention, which is going to be really big in the next few months. It was important that, but you got to get the food, because if you don't, all those conversations cannot really be had if someone doesn't know where their next meal is coming from.
Jeff Griffin is here. He's the executive director of the Franciscan Center. I want to send everybody out to the website. It's fcbmore.org. FCBmore, a Franciscan Center, bmore.org. Go ahead, Don.
I was going to say, former Baltimore County Executive Kevin Kamenetz often used a quote from one of his favorite elected officials. It was Senator and Vice President Hubert Humphrey. And there's this Humphrey quote where he talks about, as a society, we will be judged by how we treat the most vulnerable among us. And that's certainly who turns up on your doorstep every day. For those folks who are driving around now, listening in their cars and trying to get a real sense of the Franciscan Center, help us understand who the moms and dads and aunts and uncles and brothers and sisters, the children who are showing up on your doorstep. Educate our listeners and Nestor and me as to who it is that needs your help.
Well, you know, diversity is a huge factor here. So we can get young. So I think we serve babies here. We have some infant formula that we have on stock in case a mom or grandma needs to. So all the way up through, you know, we've had 90-year-olds here have their birthdays here. So we've had every background, right? So we've had some of our clients and community. I call them guests until they start meeting with our social workers, and then I call them and then we call them clients. But we've had clients who are graduates of some very nice private schools, high schools around the neighborhood. We have some that are, you know, that haven't even, you know, couldn't even or didn't even stay in high school, and it's a whole gamut, and it really, it could be any of us, you know. So I'm also a person who is in recovery for my drinking, and if God wasn't with me, I could have had some really bad accidents. And I could have been one of these individuals coming across. So every day, I would say, what kind of person, you know, if someone really wants to know what kind of person are coming to soup kitchens that are still around, say, look in the mirror. Because if it wasn't for the grace of God, it could be any one of us or one of our relatives. And I guarantee you that one of your relatives or somebody is food insecure, and it isn't going to take them much more or her much more to need the services of the Franciscan Center or a place like us.
Well, Jeff, so you have this compelling personal story, as did your chef, Stephen Albright. He was very honest and open with us about his battle with sobriety. We're very proud of, as he should be, that he's been sober for 13 years. Talk a little bit about your battle to get sober and how that's progressed.
So I would say I have been very lucky, and it took me a long time to even accept my alcoholism. And I would say, you know, I got very, I'm the youngest of four. My brothers and my mom, you know, they had a really tough family, you know, growing up after my dad left us, and we were in a tough situation. And so growing up, they all spoiled rotten me, to be honest, even though we had nothing a lot, but just the way they treated me. And so even when it comes to alcohol, they were just kind of like, okay, Jeff, okay. And so I grew up, you know, not really facing a lot of the consequences that alcohol would bring. And so, but then, you know, certain situations, you know, and really it's not until I started going to meetings, and it took about 2 years before the meetings actually sunk in with AA. I was never sent there. I've never been arrested for drinking and driving, never been arrested for any alcohol related offenses, except when I was 17, I had an open beer on the boardwalk in Ocean City. That was it. And so it took a while to get it in, and my wife stuck with me, and she knew when she needed to put her foot down. And then and I listened, and then I listened, and then even when I drank and I still was going to AA meetings, it felt different, right? But what really did it for me, and February will be 4 years for me coming up.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I mean, it's always a challenge. But what did it for me was I knew I was hurting my wife. I'm hurting my kids, right? Even though, you know, they're 12 and under, you know, but it's when, it was during Lent. We're a very Catholic family, and my oldest daughter, who was probably 8, 9, I woke up feeling horrible on my couch, and it's Lent. It's the start of Lent. And my oldest daughter says, "Daddy, can you stop drinking for Lent?" And I couldn't, the rest of the day, I couldn't stop. I was very emotional. And that was the time that I had, that was my gut check. That was my, I hit bottom, and my 8-year-old daughter's looking me in the face and says, "Daddy, please stop drinking," basically. And then all my memories about how my dad, when my dad was in active addiction when I was growing up, and I've heard the memories and I know some of it, and how he would just beat the heck out of my mom. And my brothers ended up stopping him and holding him until the police came. Just all those memories came back, and that's very vivid. And I'm like, and that was my spot to say, I will not let this go another generation, and that I'm going to put a stop to this. And I got a lot of help and a lot of meetings and a lot of intense therapy. And luckily I grew closer to my faith. And that's where it is. And I would say about 2 years ago, maybe 2.5 years ago, it stopped becoming a struggle not to drink. And it kind of got removed. It was like God, for me, it's my God took it off my shoulder, so I don't have to taste it every day and think about it every day. And to be honest, I have not been very open about it. But then when Steve comes to our center this past October, and he's very open about his battle, fighting for his independence from alcohol and drugs, that's when I said, and how inspired I felt listening to him, I said, you know what, I have to be more open, because I don't know who I might be able to touch and say, you know what, I've never been arrested. And that doesn't mean you're not, you know, that you shouldn't self-examine yourself about your behavior, you know. And the thing that I was, you know, what got me most was someone's like, you're not an alcoholic. And I said, you know what? Every time I drink, I didn't get in trouble, but every time I got in trouble, I was drinking. And
isn't it?
Yep. So it's, you know, so we have discussions with my 12-year-old daughter about this. You know, I say, I have this disease, and my dad has this disease. And we have open discussions. And she's even gone with me to an AA meeting before, because she didn't know. She wanted to see where Daddy was going. And so I thought it was important.
It's so interesting that you mentioned that. Nestor and I have a dear friend who's passed away, who in one of his stints in rehab, I've never forgotten this, and he came back and he was talking to me, and it's that issue you were just raising, and it resonated with him as well. They had people in his rehab group list 10 incidents or events in their lifetime that they were embarrassed about or regretted, and if they could do them over, would like to have a redo and do them again because it's not the way they wanted to behave, and you had to list 10 of them. And then you had to check each one that was related to alcohol that probably would not have happened had you not had too much alcohol, and his list was 10 out of 10. And he's never He never forgot it until the day he died. His list was 10 out of 10. So for you to share that story, I think it really, really helps people.
Well, you said you didn't know who you were going to touch. You just touched us, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You touched Aaron and so many family members. But I know you're on the clock and there's a lot going on. Before you go, though, is there a moment for you that really captures the impact of the Franciscan family? Is there an individual or a family where you go, man, that's why I come to work every day?
I would say yes. You know what? And it happened a couple weeks ago. Chef Steve and I and our outreach director went to visit one of the low-income senior homes in West Baltimore that we've been partnering with. And I don't get out as much as I did when this whole COVID started, because I wanted to meet face to face with every new partner. But so this one, it took me a little while to get out there, and we sat in this wonderful woman's apartment, and we've been supplying them with food every day, and then for about 100 people or so, and then pantry bags, 100 pantry bags a week we were doing. And then we get out there, and then we meet with this woman who's basically the building captain to make sure that any of the residents who can't really get out of their apartment has food from our center. And we're in her apartment, and she's telling us about her story. And then she says, you know, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for your center 18 years ago when I was struggling with domestic violence, and I came to the center, and your Judy, who is still the head of our social work floor, said, you know, took her aside and worked with her to get her the help that she needed so that she could, you know, put that domestic violence person, you know, and start doing not only the legal battle that she had to gear up for and with the police department, but also get her prepared to live on her own. And she's like, it's because of Judy that I'm able to do this. And here she is 18 years ago or so, and she's the block. You know, she's like basically the building captain, making sure that all the residents in that building are getting fed and have the food during COVID. I mean, we know Baltimore is Smalltimore, but it really just takes you away on how one person, one center can have an effect on a community and a city. And that's what we're hoping that we can turn that up a little bit and really start really getting to work.
You can learn more about the Franciscan Center, a ministry, the Sisters of St. Francis of Assisi, sharing dignity and hope in Baltimore for 50 years, just like me, from 1968. From Dundalk to Patapsco, he is a Patapsco grad. I'm not going to hold that against you, Jeff. I mean, I think we've created peace here. He's the executive director of the Franciscan Center. Just elevator speech real quickly on what you do for those who do not know and aren't going to run to the website right now. 30 seconds.
So Franciscan Center helps people who are in crisis, individuals and families, and we help them get to stability.
Wow, that's even less than 30 seconds. I'll get Anquan Bolden on to tell more next time while he and I get together. I know he's been very generous. And really for all that that we've tried to represent with Baltimore Positive and bringing stories on of all of this before the pandemic, it's really been even more inspirational to see people bootstrapping up during the middle of the pandemic that were already sort of pushed to the limit. Don, before the segment's over, I want to give you that Humphrey quote just because I want to get it right. You ready? It was once said that the moral test of government is how that government treats those who are in the dawn of life, the children, those who are in the twilight of life, the elderly, and those who are in the shadows of life, the sick, the needy, and the handicapped. Hubert H. Humphrey, there you go.
And with that, County Executive Kevin Kamenetz.
Drop the mic. We appreciate all of our guests and our friends at KO for putting some things together for us to tell some great stories, like the story not only of Chef Steve Albright, but also our friend Jeff at the San Franciscan Center. You can find them at fcbmore.org. Got to tell you about our friends at Taharka with the delicious Mint Flicks and Chills ice cream. Make sure you're loading up on that. They are bringing it to your door. You can go to Taharka Brothers and Taharka.com and order you some ice cream. State Fair out in Catonsville. Open up El Guapo, Mexican restaurant across the street. We'll be telling you about that. I'll be chipping and dipping and salsing and guacamole and probably margarita as well at El Guapo. Evan Brown is going to join us at Baltimore Positive later in the week. Fadley shipping those crab cakes, the world-famous Fadley's crab cakes. They're also coming to Catonsville and making a new location over there. Fadley'sCrabCakes.com, award-winning lump crab cakes. It says right on the website, place order and make them happy. Nothing makes me happier than a Fadley's crab cake right about now over at Lexington Market. 4th of July upon us. If you're thinking about listing, buying, selling a home this summer, you need Jeff Moeller at Moeller & Gary Realty. You can find him at MoellerandGary.com as well. Whew, on behalf of former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller and Out on the Porch and everything I'm doing at WNST.net, we're calm, we're local, and we're always Baltimore positive.